Welcome back to the Biz News Rugby Show. As always, joined by Rory Steyn, but this time together in the Hermanus office, having just wrapped up the 7th Biz News Conference. Rory, actually, you closed out that conference. You were the last speaker in last night's nightcap. Unfortunately, I missed quite a lot of your talk. I was packing up all the recording equipment, but do you have any thoughts post-conference?
I certainly do. Good morning, Patrick, and to all of the Biz News tribe. If you look at the WhatsApp group, you'll see that there's plenty of praise, encouragement, gratitude, you know, to your team. And Alec was kind enough to acknowledge that it's not, you know, it's not him. It's he has a very, very good team. So Tish and all of you guys, Sizzy, you know, you see the effort. And the great thing about the Biz News Conference is that it is, the content is insanely good. I mean, that lineup of speakers, I don't think there's no other conference in South Africa that pulls that level of speakers. So I have nothing but praise for Biz News and thanks. And I thought it was a superb conference. Great venue. We had, we had brilliant weather for the first 2 days. It got a bit windy yesterday, and it's probably worse today. But, you know, you can't complain when you're in Hermanus.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to complain. Yeah, absolutely. And this weekend, we've got the last round of the Six Nations. It's technically three teams still mathematically with the chance to win.
Yeah.
France probably put themselves in pole position, beating Ireland pretty convincingly last weekend in Dublin. And then another sort of narrative leading into the weekend is Scotland's dilemma. If they do beat France, they could be handing the trophy to England. Obviously, no team in with the chance of a Grand Slam. But the first game of the weekend, Italy versus Ireland in Italy, in Rome. Ireland having come off that defeat against France, not looking like likely champions. They'll need probably a miracle from both Wales and Scotland to win. Yeah. But that game, Ireland win.
Yes, I think they will. Interesting. Two things are interesting there. The first one is that Italy will obviously want to right some of what went wrong against France, because France came out wounded by their press, by their performance, and absolutely pulverized Italy, putting 70 points on them. And that wasn't good. And then they were unable to rectify that last week. So it's the last game of the season for them. It's at home. And I think they're going to want to put in a performance. But I can't look past Ireland. And the other interesting thing is that Ireland are playing Jack Crowdy at fly half. So Sam Prendergast drops to the bench, which is very interesting. But other than that, it is a full board Ireland team. So Ireland are not messing around here. They're not taking Italy lightly. They're not giving youngsters or uncapped players or whomever a chance. They've gone with the big guns. And Tadhg Furlong, their champion tight head who's been injured for a while, is back, not starting. He comes off the bench. Finlay Beelam has done a very good job of deputizing there and continues to start in the number three shirt. But as I say, Ireland not messing around. So I'm calling an Ireland win by about 14 points, 15 maybe. Yeah.
And I think they'll probably need along with the two miracle wins from Wales and Scotland, they'll probably need a bonus point as well to just make sure that they win the whole thing.
I think they'll score 4 tries.
And then next game, again, Wales, winless Wales at home, but against a strong England team who also have a chance to win the whole thing. We'll want to win against Wales.
Yeah.
Another, do you think Wales are going to go through winless?
No. I'm actually going to stick my neck out, Patrick. And you look, they've had 16 losses. They had 14 in a calendar year. Last year, they didn't win a single match. And they've lost another couple of games now. I don't think, so it's got to end somewhere. That losing streak has got to end somewhere. Why not against the old enemy? And listen, I mean, everybody wants to beat England, right? Everybody. But there are few teams, Scotland is one and the Boks are another, but there are few teams that want to beat England as much as Wales do. It really is their old enemy. They, you know, they share a common border. They're landlocked. It's a landlocked border as it is to the north with Scotland in the case of England. But Wales have a very proud history against England at the Principality Stadium, or in Cardiff, let's put it like that. And I just think, you know, I try to put myself into the mindset of those Welsh players. So they've been through this really, let's just call it an uncertain era under Gatland the second time he came back. And there were all kinds of problems, clearly. So they eventually make the change, they being the Welsh Rugby Union. They put in a stellar performance against Ireland. Didn't quite beat them, but they were very good. Players back in the right positions and all the stuff we've said on the show. They cannot get past Scotland in Edinburgh, although they came back beautifully at the end. They were 27 points down and they lost the game by 8, I think. The next thing is, and it's the last match, is the old enemy coming down the freeway to Cardiff. And I just think that Wales are going to pick themselves up by their bootstraps, and they are. And I know England fear this. There's no question. England, we spoke about the banana skin for Scotland last week. Scotland managed not to slip on it in Edinburgh, but this is not in at Twickenham. This is in Cardiff. So I reckon Wales by 1, 2, or 3 points.
Yeah, I mean a Wales win would.
Yeah,
Scotland would be very happy with that. They don't have. Any doubts in their mind, should we lose to Wales? Obviously, I don't think Frother Scotland would ever go into that game intending to lose, but they won't at least that thought.
So I think that game's going to be tight, Patrick, and we might not see 4 tries by the winning team. I don't think it's going to be that open type of game that we're expecting to see in France, in Paris. Yeah.
Sort of similar to that Scotland England game.
Correct.
Yeah.
Very tight game. Yeah.
And then the final game, obviously, I've just seen quite a few memes about the Scotland dilemma, because I think there's one thing Scottish fans probably love more than seeing Scotland win is seeing England lose. So yeah. France versus Scotland in France. France hot with a big win against Ireland.
Yes.
Do you think Scotland stand a chance?
They certainly stand a chance. My head tells me, though, that France are going to be too strong in Paris. I think it's going to be very open. I think look, if France win with a bonus point, nobody can touch them, because then, you know, even if England get a bonus point, Ireland get a bonus point, they have 1 point too many. So despite their big points difference, I think they will score 5 tries against the Scottish, but the Scottish are going to come to play. Those are two great back lines facing one another. The matchups there are unbelievably mouth-watering, if you want to use a really extravagant adjective, because you've got those backs, you know, you've got Lowe up against Darcy Graham, you've got Finn Russell against now Ntamack, who's possibly in the Northern Hemisphere the number one fly-off, if it isn't Finn, and you've got centre pairings with a little bit of injury there at Middledeep on both sides. So Gael Fiku comes back in at 13. But Sione Tuipulotu is not back yet. But wow, Tom Jordan has really stood in well. And Hugh Jones is in great form, if not the form of his life. And you've got the two top fullbacks. You've got Hugo Keenan. I mean, that's Ireland. You've got Tomas Ramos at the back. And playing against his Toulouse clubmate, Blair Kinghorn. So, as I say, mouthwatering. I think the French pack is, it's certainly significantly bigger and heavier. I don't know about stronger. I do worry about the Scotland bench, although I see what Gregor has done is he started Johnny Gray on the bench. Maybe that's a move to counter Emmanuel Miafu coming off that bench and just decimating people at 150 kgs like he did last week. That bench was just too strong for the Irish. It's as simple as that. You know, they couldn't deal with that. And it's a very risky 7-1 bench split in France, because they don't have a Quagga Smith. We said this all last
week.
The very thing they feared happens, Dupont gets the injury and they've only got a scrum off on the bench. And how brilliant was he when he came out? So he's starting now. So let's see. But obviously I would love Scotland to shock the world and the Six Nations and pull one off there. I can't see it. I see it as highly unlikely, but I'm looking forward to those games, both the England-Wales one and the Scotland-France one, because I think we're going to see some absorbing rugby. The one's going to be open, the other one's going to be tight and contested and not a little bit of a niggle in there. Yeah, great weekend of rugby.
Man. No, that sounds
super Saturday.
I'm sure if you want to tune into a tri-fest, I think France versus Scotland, that's a game for you. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, France are the favorites, but anything can happen in rugby, and who knows who's going to end up on top after this weekend. I think it's, like you said, mouthwatering rugby this weekend.
And it frequently does. Something weird happens. And the great thing about this tournament, like we've constantly been discussing, is that every single year these fixtures are sold out. And the smallest of the stadiums is the Aviva in Dublin at 55,000. You've normally got 70, 80, almost approaching 90,000 at Twickenham every single week. They sing, they're passionate. Doesn't matter about the awful weather. The weather's often quite terrible. And they get stuck in there. So it really is something to look forward to.
And then just to close off after the Six Nations discussions, the Springbok training camps kicked off in Cape Town, or is about to kick off. Do you have any thoughts about that?
I looked online. I tried to find out what was going on there, and most of the reporting is talking about it's kind of pre-camp and looking forward and into it. So we'll get the feedback once they finish. It obviously includes the local players, and then what Rusty typically does is he'll wait for the guys in Japan to finish up, and when they become available, he'll bring them in on an alignment camp like he did late last year in Stellenbosch. He's got to now cast the net over that group of 51 players that he used last year, probably whittle that down slightly, and then use slightly fewer, maybe 40 something players this year, and then really narrow it down the following year as we lead up into that next World Cup. So I think we're in a really good place, and he knows exactly what he's doing. We've of course got Felix Jones coming back, and he's given him this role we spoke about yesterday, which is a kind of roving overall role, not in the same mold as Dwayne Vermeulen, because Dwayne Vermeulen does his roving coaching role amongst all of the different levels of South African rugby, starting with the under 20s, the ladies. He does all of that, where Felix will concentrate on the box, but across all departments. And he's very analytical, so I'm sure they're having a lot of boardroom discussions with the players in the camp before they get them out on the field or in the gym. So I'm looking forward to hearing what's coming out of there, but I repeat, I think that the Boks are in a very, very good place at the minute.
And any new faces to keep an eye on?
Yeah, well, of course, there's the guys we discussed last week. Kieran Horn isn't quite a new face, but gee, he's playing some fantastic rugby. Van Wyk, the little 13 at the Lions, is really exciting. You've got Juries, who I think people have had an eye on him for a while. He's a big boy, he's big and strong. And as much as we love our centers, it was initially Lukanyu and Damian Dialendi. Now it's Jesse Creel and Damian, and Lukanyu is pushing them hard. He can play 12 and 13. But those youngsters are coming. They're coming for those positions, and it's great. It's a wonderful problem for Russi and Tony Brown to have. Yeah. And the one that the big eye opener this year, undoubtedly Apelele Fassi. He has played for the Boks before. Russi gave him a few pointers, told him to go and get strong. He's had a revolutionary season. He's been brilliant for the Sharks and he's been brilliant for the Boks. And you got Damian Willemser, probably fully rehabbed by now, chomping at the bit to get there because that 15 shirt is his, And we've still got to get Willie over the line for 100 caps. I think he needs one more. So, yeah, I think we're in such a healthy position. But, Fassi is one of the youngsters, definitely one to watch. Yeah. Of course, Sasha started off like a house on fire, then got injured again. So we'll see. I think the jury's still out on him. We don't know who our number one choice scrum half is. Russ has picked, I think, 7 in that group of of Boks to attend the camps. My vote would go to Grant Williams. Not exactly a youngster, but gee, you can't beat that speed, man. Yeah, pretty exciting.
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to some Springbok rugby later this year. And who knows what the...
So sad that Dupont will now not be seen down here. I mean, everybody would have loved that because I'm a massive Dupont fan. Not everybody is as convinced as I am. I think they must be blind or crazy or both. But it's just such a pity that his ACL injury is going to prevent him from coming down here. I mean, what a pity.
And then what do you think the next innovation after the 7-1 split might be from Russi and Co?
You don't want to say it, right? You don't want to say that he's going to go 8-0. So I suppose he could go 4-4, put four big backs on there, you know, maybe play them in the back row. I don't know. With Rossi, I don't think we should try and second guess him.
No, yeah, I don't think you can predict anything to come out of there. Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's a weekend of thrilling rugby ahead, and even more thrilling rugby to come next week. And looking forward to the middle of the year, end of the year. It's a year of rugby, a year of good rugby.
And you know, Patrick, it's a nice little segue, because the Six Nations ends, which is a marvelous tournament, and then there is a bit of a gap before the summer internationals. Well, Northern Hemisphere summer, called them summer internationals in June, and the Rugby Championship, because the bit in between, the rest of this month, April and May, is the business end of both the URC and the Investec Champions Cup and the EPCR, which is the second tier. So that's all into the round of last 16. The playoffs start, a lot of traveling and up and downing starts. A lot to look forward to. It's just really difficult sometimes to get your head into it, because you're well into the URC trying to figure the Investec Champions Cup out. Then that all pauses and we get into Six Nations, and you think, okay, so now you watch the Six Nations and it gets to where it is on a Super Saturday now. Then it's done, and then it's, okay, back into the URC. And when does the Investec Champions Cup come in? So, it can be a little bewildering until World Rugby hopefully figure out a global season. I really hope they do. I would like to see the Southern Hemisphere internationals played in overlap with the Six Nations. So the Six Nations is really early in the year, because it starts late in January, normally the last weekend in January, and ends first weekend in March. So if you can move that a little bit so that we're not playing in the heat of summer, and we find a commonality where the Rugby Championship and the Six Nations are played at the same time, so that you release the player block at the same time and players then get probably an extra 2 or 3 weeks of rest. Our players are not, South Africans are not resting much at the moment, because typically we rest over Christmas, but you're not. You play URC derbies, right through December in the heat of summer and into January and February. So yeah, they've got to figure something out. I don't think I have the solution other than kind of a very general principle that I've just given, but leave it to them. I don't have all that much trust all of the time in World Rugby. I think sometimes they get themselves into a right muddle, but let's give them a chance and see if they can pull something out that will benefit all the rugby players globally, and make for every match that is played must be competitive. I don't know if you can solve the problem of coaches choosing B teams or weaker teams when they travel. I'm not sure you can. And it certainly makes this very difficult. But let's see what, and just maybe a punt, Patrick, if we could, for our tribe, just to say, guys, that we are going to get the founder of Super Brew on our show. It'll be a video show. He'll tell us about the genesis of Super Brew, hopefully encourage a bit more sign up from our premium subscribers here at Biz News, and just understand a bit more about how this incredible app and just a prediction game, bringing an additional layer of excitement into watching rugby, has influenced rugby. And so very, very much looking forward to that, Patrick. Excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat, so I'm going to say goodbye. Wish everybody in the Business Tribe, number one, safe travels home if you're still down in Amanus and heading back today, and a wonderful weekend on the couch watching some fantastic Six Nations. So great weekend, everybody. Enjoy the rugby.
Awesome. Rory Staines, our Biz News Rugby Insider, and I'm Patrick Kidd from biznews.com.